This is the Jenny McCarthy Show.
I'm going to do my best. If it goes off the rails, that's what they get.
Welcome back to the Jenny McCarthy Show. I'm Jenny McCarthy Wahlberg. I'm so happy to be back, and the gang is all here, including one of my favorite guests that we have on. He's reoccurring because he is one of the best. Do you guys want to regain or keep that hero status with your kids? Author and life coach Thomas Gagliano is back to point us in the right direction. Hi, Thomas.
Hey, Jenny. What's the good word? How you doing?
I'm so always happy to see you. My heart gets filled with joy when I see you on my schedule.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Absolutely, you guys. One of the best. He's got a few books I highly suggest picking up. The Problem Was Me. Also, Don't Put Your Crap in Your Kid's Diaper. They just get me every single time. So when do you lose hero status with your kids?
Well, you lose it when you're not, when you don't keep working on it. You know, we talk about relationships, all relationships. You could put this in any walk of life. The harder you work on your business, the better shot it could be successful. The more you work on your relationships, the better shot it could be successful. You know, I always talk about this quick little story with my son watching a baseball game. This whole hero thing came from him. Truly. Mm. I was watching a game and he said to me, "Hey, Dad, how come the kids are rooting so hard for their favorite baseball player?" And I said, "Well, those baseball players are the heroes." And he was thinking about what I said. You know, I guess he's a little mind working. He said, "You know, Dad, they may be my hero someday, but you're always going to be my first hero." We all are our children's first heroes. We teach them how to view the world, how the world views them. And I think that that's something that if we keep instilling that and working on that, we're never going to lose that, really. We're really never going to lose that. And that's from communications, giving them permission to feel their feelings, telling them that it's okay to be vulnerable. You know, Jenny, I had a dad that if I was emotional or cried, he called me his little girl. Now, What message that gave me was I'm not allowed to share feelings. I brought that right into my marriage. I never shared my feelings with my wife, with anyone. I protected myself feeling I'm doing something wrong. I'm a wimp. You know the society messages, guys can't be vulnerable.
Of course.
Of course. We're not wimps. We're strong. Now, let me tell you something. That's a bunch of crap. Because the guys I know that share their feelings are the happiest guys in the world. And we need to instill that in our children at an early age. You know what? It's okay to feel your feelings. You don't have to feel how I want you to feel to be accepted. You're accepted unconditionally. And a child that doesn't feel that their feelings matter will eventually feel like they don't matter.
100%. You know, I see that when I was in California, like living there, there was a lot more, you know, parents that I think allowed their children to speak or sent them to therapists.
Mm-hmm.
One of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Moving back to the Midwest, you know, everything's always a little bit behind, but it's also got a kind of a hard, more blue collar Midwest mm-hmm. mentality.
Right, right.
Where I still notice, you know, dads being like, "Suck it up, don't be a wuss."
Yeah, right, right.
To boys. Now, let me play the devil's advocate for other people listening.
Sure.
What about the listeners that are going, but they're all turning into snowflakes? Is there an imbalance where the kids are not, they're going too far?
Oh,
is that possible?
Great, great question. And here's where a parent needs to create a child ready for the world. Because if we don't allow our children to start to get out of their own messes, if we don't create an environment where we don't jump in and fix their problems all the time, we let them brainstorm and fix their problems. But they always know that if they're struggling, they got mom and dad to come back to talk to. I see parents all the time that come to me that they're always fixing their kids' problems. And the child, when the child gets in the world, they're not ready to handle the world. They're waiting for somebody else to fix their problem. And you know the funny thing? They get mad at the parent that always rushed in and fixed their problem. And the parent looks at me like, well, why? I was always there. I always, yeah, you were always there. Get out of the way a little bit. Let them fix their problem.
That's a really good way of saying it. Get out of the way a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And you know what I tell parents? Look, we don't want to, when our children falter in life, to make them feel like they are a mistake. They made a mistake, but they're not a mistake. There's a big difference. So we need to give them consequences, but teach them it's based on choices. At a young age, if you don't put your toys away, you can't play with your toys the next day. At an older age, if you don't come in at a certain time, you can't go out the next night. That is giving them consequences based on the choices they make. Not us. You chose not to come in at the right time. You chose not to go out the next day. So if we instill their choices, we make them ready to face the world. And not to give them yelling and screaming mistakes like, get in your room. Damn it. You're just... No, that's not how we discipline our children.
And then let me ask you this, because I, again, going into the balance area, I, you know, Evan has gone through my own son so much, so I would have him talk out his own battles. Mm-hmm. And he got really good at it, going to his friends saying, that's not right, just hurt my feelings, blah, blah, blah. And there was a time just last week that he came to me, and this one was different. He was like visibly shaken and was more like hurt to the core by something that one of his friends did. So I asked him if he had expressed how he felt, and he said, yeah, but this is different. This is different. Mm. So I went in and sat down with the group, got to hear everyone's story, and kind of counseled it a little bit. And Evan pulled me over later and said, it meant so much to me that you just had my back just now.
I was like, oh my God,
because I haven't stepped in before, but there are moments, correct?
Absolutely. Look, I talk about this with bullying. You know, a kid goes to school and he's being bullied. Now, we want them to work out their own issues with that bully as best as they can. But if a child is in real danger, if a child really can't handle it, oh, you better believe. Our role is to protect our children emotionally, physically. That's what our role is. Our role is to keep communications open. What I love is the fact that your son was able to tell you, thank you, it meant a lot to me. That's the environment you created, that safe environment. And that is what we all want to do as parents. We want to create an environment where our children know that they could talk to us, that we're not going to judge their actions, rather do what we need to do to make them safe. Listen, you know, my kids talk to me about many things. In fact, I told you my daughters tell me more than I want to know.
Yes,
I always
exactly.
tell you that. She's sitting right there looking at me.
So the
point is that I'd rather have that, to know that they could come and talk to me, because that is going to proceed into their relationships. Your son too, in his relationships, is going to feel a sense of value when he speaks to whoever he is in a relationship with, that I actually feel better when I talk about my struggles, feel that I got to handle it because I'm a man, you know, that kind of bull crap. This is all great messages you're giving him. Great messages.
We just touched on this, and we do this every time, but it's so important. I'm going to bring it up again. How we, you know, bring our past to our present situations. If we haven't gone and done the work on our core trauma when we're younger,
oh boy.
As my mother-in-law says, everything shows up in your 40s. You know, every possible demon, it doesn't have to be your 40s, but the majority of people I know in their late 30s, 40s wind up getting divorced. I mean, all my friends were divorced at 40, like all these demons are, you know, I'd hate to call them demons, but you're, the issues that you haven't dealt with, you're not going to get a free pass in this lifetime, pretty much. They're going to show up. So that too, it's like if you feel like you're listening and going, wait a minute, I'm one of those parents that have been shutting down my child. Let's remind them, you've got to be an example. You've got to go and do some work.
Sure you do. And you know what? Here's the tough thing, Jenny. When I have clients come in my men's groups, we think we're being bad people if we talk about our parents. We want to look at our parents as being who? They're our heroes.
Right.
So we want to look at them as being these perfect people. And I tell them, look, this isn't bashing parents. It's not a blame game. But let's take what messages your parents gave you that's helping you in your life with your intimacy, and let's pay a little attention to those that aren't. And I said this from the beginning. Think about when this conflict resolution. How did your parents act when there was conflict? Did one shut down? Did one rage and anger? Did one run out the door? How did they handle that? Because that will show up in your adult relationships. You're not only in a relationship with your partner, but in a relationship with their childhood messages as well. And how many people out there listening to this will turn around and say, oh my God, it just sounded like my mother. Oh right. My God, it just sounded like my father. Or your spouse will say, you know, you just sounded like your mother when you said that. This is ingrained stuff. And it's not only verbal messages, it's nonverbal messages. How many people out there, their mom or dad makes a certain face, a certain gesture, and boy, is there a whole load of messages behind that gesture. Right? Don't think that that stuff goes away. It will show up. And when will it show up? When there's tension in your relationship, that's when it'll show up.
Ah, I understand that people who've been married for a while are getting divorced in their like 30s, 40s. I hate to put a number on it, but mm-hmm. that just seems like would you agree? It's kind of a vital age.
Without a doubt. There is a point in your relationship where you need to work on what needs to be fixed. What happens many times in life in the 30s and 40s is we start to separate. You know, we get consumed by our work. We get consumed by all these other things. And all of a sudden we stop talking to each other. We stop being curious with each other. Hey, what's going on? What are you doing? What do you like? And when
getting
we stop
curious.
Being curious with each other, all of a sudden we start to, and this is the tough part, we start to find other people that seem to be more curious. Then our spouse is more curious, and all of a sudden, we start to stray away, and we don't even know we're doing it, Jenny.
No, oh my God, I'm so glad you said that, because one of my girlfriends in California went through a divorce, and literally is in a relationship that looks identical to her parents' relationship. Dad verbally abused mom, and she can't understand, like, she came over for a counseling session a while ago. She flew in because she was in so much pain. And she, when I was looking at her text messages, I couldn't believe the way this guy was talking to her. I was like, oh my God, you're in a verbally abusive relationship. She goes, what are you talking about? This is like, it's been like it's every day. I don't know what you mean. I go, girlfriend, you need to go backwards, because the model that you had as your parents, who your dad abused your mom, you think that's normal because you had no other role model.
Exactly. And what's acceptable should be unacceptable. But Jenny, we become comfortable in what's toxic. We become uncomfortable in what's healthy. I tell clients all the time, if you don't have those uncomfortable conversations, you may never grow. Those conversations have to be, you know, when you talk to me like this, it's very hurtful. And when you hurt me, the story I make up is, we're never going to get close. And I got to make a choice if you're not going to work on that. I need to make choices in my life. We have to learn how to communicate our uncomfortability, or we stay stuck in relationships that are toxic. We just don't know how to get out of it. We know it's wrong at some level, but our feet are cemented. It's almost like we just accept unacceptable behavior as being normal, and it's not normal.
And when I broke it down with her, and this goes through, I mean, I went through this too. Everybody I know went through
it. Right.
She, bottom line, was scared to being alone. She said, I would rather be in an abusive relationship than being alone. What is so scary about being alone?
Jenny, the biggest wound my clients have is a wound of abandonment. It comes from self-esteem. It comes from a message internally that says, I'm not lovable. I'll never find anybody in the rest of my life that'll love me or treat me right. So we end up sitting in toxic relationships because we're so afraid of being abandoned based on our self-esteem. This is childhood messages. Somewhere along the line, your girlfriend got the message that she wasn't good enough. She wasn't mm-hmm. lovable. She didn't matter. There wasn't enough people coming to her in her childhood saying, hey, what's going on, Shirley or Judy or whatever? What's going on? How do you feel? She's not getting enough of that, so she doesn't feel good. It could be she was abandoned physically. Maybe a parent died at an early age. Children don't understand that death is part of life. Children say, why did you leave me? Why did you leave me?
Right.
There's all reasons that people have an abandonment wound. I hit the abandonment wound right away. What's the story you're making up? If the story you're making up is, if this guy leaves me, I'm never going to find another lover, a partner, I'm never going to be okay.
That's what people say.
Yeah, we need to confront that story and get rid of that story and blow it up. And this is what I do with the help of a support group like yourself with your girlfriend, so you can tell her the positive messages that she's not hearing in her own head.
That's 100% right. And it's crazy because when I tell her, you know, she's so worth so much better, like, you know, love yourself. That concept seems so foreign to people who are so in the hole with their deep insecurities. They think loving themselves is giving themselves unconditionally to the abuser.
You nailed something perfect there. And the difference is, I teach people the difference between selfish and self-care. It's very confusing to those that have wounds. They think they're being selfish if they take care of themselves first.
You're right.
And that is what has to be processed. No, it's not selfish. It's self-care. Because at the end of the day, the most important relationship any of us have is the one we have with ourselves. And if we're not good with that, and your girlfriend is struggling with that, that common denominator is going to be in every relationship you have. And how do you empower yourself like an adult? See, what's happening to her is when he abuses her, she's becoming that little girl again as a child. And she's reacting like a child. And it's a little crude, but I tell my clients, let's put your big boy, big girl shoes on. Empower yourself. Say, no, I'm not going to tolerate that. And if you're going to do that, now I have to make a decision. But some people can't do that unless they have the support of other people to hold them up. They're not strong enough to do it alone. So if they're working on that in therapy, building up a better sense of self with a support group, like, hey, you go, girl. You got this. You could do this. You're lovable. You're wonderful. With a bunch of people that are constantly reinforcing her, you'd be amazed. People can do so much more with the help of other people than they could do for themselves. And this is what I do in all my groups.
I'm so glad you brought that up because support from people is so important. She, and I'm going to bring this up only because there might be listeners that are going, oh my God, I understand. He had basically brainwashed her into not telling a soul all of these years.
That's narcissism.
5 years. And I said, you are in a cult. The cult leader has brainwashed you into enabling him and protecting him. And so she, all these years, couldn't reach out for support because she thought she was, you know, protecting him. She, you know, he would say, I don't want anyone to know about what we're working on, keep it between us, and was so lost in that. And I told her, you have to wake up and take the blinders off. He is a cult leader.
That's the narcissism that he has, the gaslighting. Because when people are abusive, they want to pull you away from what I call their witnesses.
Yes.
Their witnesses are the people in their life that know their truth, that can help them. So his goal is to pull her away from her witnesses so that he can convince her that everything that goes wrong in this world, if it rains tomorrow, it's her fault. And this is the schema of narcissists. This is the schema. So what he will do is try and pull her away from you, Jenny, because you are a witness to her truth. You're her witness. And if she eliminates her witness, she's toast. And he knows that. And this is what he's trying to do.
100%. So if people are listening right now and you feel like, why don't you have any friends? Because she was kind of blaming, like, look at all my friends kind of disappeared. I said, no, you disappeared.
You're right.
You disappeared. You cut everybody out of your life.
Tell her your witnesses you eliminated.
Ooh, that's really good. Tom Gagliano, I could literally talk to you for, of course, probably 7 hours. You've got coming up any seminars that we should know about?
No, I'm going to be speaking in L.A. soon, but nothing else is going on.
ThomasGagliano.com is his website. Do you still do, if people want to get you on a Skype, can they, sessions?
Sure. You could reach me on my website, theproblemwasme.com. That's theproblemwasme.com. That's after my best-selling book. And I have some videos there. I have some Jenny McCarthy radio interviews on there, too. So
I'm so glad.
Yes.
I know I was encouraging Thomas because I'm like, listen, you're so good. Let's get you out there even more.
Thank you, Jenny.
Of course. Theproblemwasme.com, correct?
Yes.
That's also the name of the book you guys need to pick up. The Problem Was Me. And don't put your crap in your kid's diaper.
Because the cleanup course could last a lifetime, right?
Oh my God, it's a great subtitle. By the way, is that the subtitle or not?
Yeah. I like the subtitle. That's why I throw it in there, right?
Of course. It's so great. It's in bookstores now. Tom, once again, thank you so much. And it's always so great to have you on.
You're welcome. Thank you,
One
Jenny.
Of the best, my friend. Thank we'll be you. Right back.
Sirius XM Pop 2K. Please.